Welcome to the Sons of Mjolnir podcast.
The Sons of... what?
This isn't your Sons of Macaroni, yeah!
The Sons of Mjolnir?
This is Sons of Mjolnir,
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Beyond Invincible. As always, I am one of your hosts, Fat Thor, and I am joined by the amazing, the awesome Sean Mott from Metalcore Nerd. Sean, how the hell are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Stoked, as always, to be talking Invincible. And, man, I mean, this is every episode, kind of, in Season 2 in general, but there's a lot that happens, a lot that goes on.
There's a lot packed into this one. We were talking before we started recording this, just kind of going over the episode again. And even after watching it like three times, just discussing it, I'm like, oh, man, yeah, I forgot that happened this episode. Oh, yeah, that happened this episode. So there's a lot to unpack here. There's a lot to go through. So, I mean, Sean, let's just get right into it. The people at home know what's up. Starting off, what were your overall thoughts of episode 6 of Invincible season two?
Man, another shocker of an episode in a few ways. Mm-hmm. I don't know. We'll get into it more, but I like the way the show handles death. Mm-hmm. And you can kind of get into the fake death thing. And it can be very bad, but I think the show does it in a way where it still shows the consequences of how mortal some of these characters are, I guess. Mm-hmm. Even though it takes them to the brink of, you know, death, I guess. But I really do like how they handle it, because, you know, there's a lot of superhero properties that do the fake death thing quite mm-hmm. a bit.
Oh, yeah.
But it's not like they disappear and they come back magically. You see the effects of what they have to go through. And I like that. And this episode does a lot of really cool things for certain characters that I didn't see the arc coming, I guess, fully. And that's cool, too. I like that. I like a good character arc. And there's definitely a few going on right now that are cool and not exactly, quote unquote, main characters. So mm-hmm. I like that. That's cool. So overall, another win. It's kind of a mirror episode of last episode where it's all this cool buildup, then it ends in a shock, and this one kind of begins in a shock, and then there's all this cool buildup after. Mm-hmm. So it's like a cool, nice, like, transition, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't have said it any better. That's a perfect way to describe it, because last episode we leave with the kind of big cliffhanger of our crew, like Mark and Eve and all them, are going in with the Sequids, and then we got King Lizard with Rex. And we're just like, you know, we're left on that huge cliffhanger. And then this episode opens up and we're no wasting time. Like, we get right to it, right to the Sequids, right to Rex. And so I feel like I'll just say my thoughts. I agree with everything you said. I love this episode. I think that this episode, like we just were talking about, has a lot of stuff packed into it, which isn't just the big climactic moments. And like you said, I think, you said it perfectly. We're seeing a lot of character growth from all of our characters. And I think that's something the show does so well, that we've talked about extensively on this show, is that it's really giving all of our characters these moments, not just Mark, not just Omni-Man, like Amber, Rex, Debbie, all these, like you said, quote unquote, side characters. They're all getting their moments. So again, cannot praise the show or this episode enough, but we got to start off with the biggest thing for me of the episode is the Rex of it all. Rex explode. So we were talking last episode how crazy the fight between all them and the Lizard League is. And yep. So we get a conclusion to that and Rex gets shot in the head. So before we start like kind of dissecting this a little bit, being someone who hasn't read the comic and you didn't know that was going to happen, what was your shock when Rex actually did get shot in the head?
Well, it's a little different probably people watching week to week because I binged all the episodes at once. Mm-hmm. So I right off the cliffhanger, I went right into that. So I was already like, what the fuck is going on? And then you go right into that and you're like, whoa, he just got shot in the fucking head. Holy mm-hmm. shit. Later you see he doesn't die exactly, but still, damn, dude got messed up. And seeing him kind of go full like blind rage and kill King Lizard with his bone
stub,
stub was pretty wild and cool, but just like overall shocking, obviously. Because and again, it's like the show already showed you this in the first episode. The Guardians of the Globe aren't invincible, they are immortal, mm-hmm. you know, even though there's two characters named that, ironically, in the show, is that they could all die at like any given point, and you kind of see multiple of them die, for lack of better terms. You do see Shrinky Gray crawl out of, which I hope puts to bed the theory of Ant-Man going in Thanos' butt. I don't think it works out very well for him. You've kind of seen what happens. Thanos, I don't think
clinches them cheeks. It's fucking over with, dude.
And I think Thanos is probably a lot stronger than Komodo Dragon or whatever the fuck his name is. So, I don't think that would have worked out very well for Scott Lang. So,
yeah, I don't think so. But that brings up a great point, though. So going to some of the changes from the comics to the screen. So in the books, Shrinking Ray is dead. He just gets eaten by Komodo Dragon, and it's just, that's it. Shrinking Ray is done. But here, like we talked about last episode, not only did they change her death in the sense of like her regrowing inside of him, but she doesn't die at all. She actually lives, which again is just such an interesting change, because again, Shrinking Ray just dies in that scene in the comics, and they're no longer in the book. So I'm curious of what kind of role, even though she's a very minor character up until now, at least, I'm curious of where she's gonna pop up later. Like, what is she gonna help do later? That just is very interesting to me. And then another change that I have to bring up is with Rex himself, in the sense of, in the books, Rex gets shot in the head, very much like he does in the show. And the fight is literally just Rex saying, shut up, and punches King Lizard in the face. And then that's it. And also another change, King Lizard lives in the book. Here we see that King Lizard definitely does not live. I mean, like you were just talking about, they do a pretty good job in this show with like the fake death. So maybe he survived that. But we definitely did not get Rex brutalizing King Lizard with his freaking arm stub. That was just...
Isn't there another character that comes in too, called like Brit or something?
Yeah. So again, very similar to the show, but so how in the show, what are they called? The defense agency or like Cecil's people kind of come in, and he and Rex has the invincible drop. In the book, it's a Brit who comes in, who's another one of the superhero characters. And he kind of comes in like, ready to go, you know what I mean? And then just sees like everyone's fucking dead. But yeah, we haven't seen Brit in the show, have we?
Mm-mm. No.
Yeah, I mean, he's not, which I'm gonna say too, like I've read all Invincible, but I haven't read like the attaching like Guardians of the Globe and some of the other Image comics that mix with it. So I think that he's more of a prominent character in some of those books, but Brit is kind of just a member of the Guardians in the books, and he has some great moments for sure. Like we get some Brit moments for sure, but I wouldn't say he's like, you know, he's not like in every issue or anything. So him not being in the show isn't like a complete loss, but it is interesting that he hasn't shown up yet.
Maybe they're saving him for something.
That's what I'm thinking. Maybe they're saving him for some crazy twist, which that would be freaking awesome. But speaking of Guardians of the Globe and all the members of Guardians of the Globe, we have to talk about, too, the Sequids a little bit. So we mentioned briefly that we got the conclusion of the Sequids. Mark and the team end up defeating him with this, like, sonic bomb thing.
Yep.
But something that I wanted to bring up about this scene is, so the scene plays out very much the same as the comics, but one minor difference is when Mark stops Immortal from taking the bomb. And he like shoves him up against the wall. And he's like, oh, like, I'm faster than you. I'm stronger than you. Like, you know, stop being an idiot, basically. Well, in the books, happens the same way. But Mark says this and he just like, you know, goes off, does his thing. But in the show, they added the little line of Immortal being like, don't fail. He looks at Mark and he just says, don't fail. And to me, I, again, very, very minor moment, but I really love that because we saw in, I think it's season one of Invincible, that Immortal is very, very not on Team Invincible and not Team Mark after what happened with Omni-Man. And he even comes to him and is like, basically like, I'm fucking watching you, bro. So I really loved this scene because I don't know, to me, it just felt like it was the kind of first sign that we're seeing of Immortal starting to trust Mark, and not only trust him, but believe in Mark's abilities.
For sure. And you get more of that kind of past this, the secret thing too, which I thought was really cool to see kind of everyone, not even just Immortal, kind of realize the hero he's grown into already.
Yeah,
in such like a short amount of time, which I think is really cool. It almost makes him like a leader in a lot of ways, which I like. But yeah, we finally get they take out the sequids. What's his name? Rudy makes the, you know, the little bomb thing as Eve's knocked out, and Shapesmith makes his barrier.
Yeah, the like Shapesmith ball.
Yeah, which was great. I'm not sure if this happens in the comics, but them taking over Rudy and Eve, that's new, right?
That's literally what I was about to say. Okay. Yeah, I love that. I really love that addition. It just kind of, like you said, it doesn't happen in the books, but I feel like just kind of really drove home the threat of the sequids. You know what I mean? Because like, obviously we see like how many there are and everything like that. But I think once you see them take Eve and Rex, at least for me, it kind of gave me a little bit more sense of like how hard it is to stop these guys, right?
For sure, yeah, because it's like they can latch onto anyone besides like Shapesmith, and I think like Immortal and Invincible. I think they mentioned something about how they're too strong for them to latch onto or something.
Yeah, it's because their skin is like impenetrable, so the sequids can't. But if you're like organic matter, then you're fucked.
Yeah. Which is cool. Yeah, it does make them very dangerous. And I do love how they're kind of like, okay, we're good, bye.
Yeah. Yeah, and the chase at the end with the other Martians, I love that too. The like the slow shot of Mark coming out of the spaceship, like perfect comic panel. Oh, so good.
Yes, it's so great. And I loved, there was an attention, because as I was rewatching, I was like, wait, I was trying to remember of how it went down. I was like, did he just kill all those Martians? But you see them, he disables the ships in a way where they're safe. And I was like, okay, cool, I'm glad they added that detail, because it also is something very important for Mark's character. Is that he makes sure they're not dead. You know, he's just like, don't chase us, bye, your ship's fucked, see you later. And I like that too. And that's in the moment when Eve's like, oh my god, that was amazing, and Immortal's like, good job out there, you know, basically. Shook his hand, which is obviously a big moment for Invincible, you know.
Absolutely. And I'll say too, you kind of hit it right on the head, but that kind of whole aspect between Immortal and Invincible, this kind of trust and respect, is a very crucial part of their relationship, and something that will be important as their relationship grows throughout the series. So I a small moment, but I really loved all of the kind of interaction with them to kind of give us a little inkling of what's to come with those two characters.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense.
Perfect. But I also got to bring up, because I really love this scene, I think it just kind of really exemplifies what we talk about, you know, Kirkman using the violence to really bring deaths and stuff to make them more impactful and all that. We get Kate's funeral. We get to see Kate's funeral in this episode, which was very sad, very, you know, but again, this is something that we don't see happen in the comic book. And I just think it's a great example of the show taking these opportunities to, like I said, make us feel the weight of these things a little bit more than when we were reading them in the comic.
Yeah, and I do love how, you know, like Immortal's only talks during it and mentions that her power is like a family curse and stuff, which is a cool little like slight like lore addition, you know, just in a thing of dialogue. But just to see like this dude who's lived for however long he's lived, hundreds, thousands of years, whatever, feel so deeply about this person and be so affected by it is so interesting. And I love that we get to see this, like, I don't know, this new layer of Immortal in the season. Because obviously, well, I mean, he's like dead for most of the season since season one.
Or he's ahead.
Yeah, and then just kind of gets, you know, reanimated, which is wild in itself. But to see him have like such complex feelings as like a being that's lived for so long is really cool to see that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, I love it. And in the books, so it's kind of explained a little bit more in the books. And like I said, we don't get the speech from Immortal in the book, which I think kind of helps deliver some of the information from the book. But really what it is Immortal explains in the book that the reason why he is like so not attached to Kate, but like they have such a connection, is he explains that she's one of the only people on that lives that understands like what it's like being killed as many times as he has. So like duplicates powers obviously are she can duplicate herself, but all those clones or duplicates, those are like, those are full people. Like those are fully Kate. So every time she dies or one of the duplicates dies, like she legit dies. And Immortal, as long as his body parts can be put back together, he can come back to life. So Immortal has died, you know, countless times too. And that's why he finds such a connection with Kate, because he feels like she's one of the only people that can truly understand him and like the way he lives his life. So I really, again, just really loved how they gave Immortal that speech at the funeral to really kind of dig deeper into that relationship, which is something, like I said, we get in the books, but just the way they kind of flip things around, I really loved in this episode.
Just classic Kirkman expanding on his own work.
Classic Kirkman, man. Classic Kirkman. And speaking of relationships, we also got, which you have some really great insights on this, which we got to talk about. But we also got to talk about the Mark and Amber. We have talked about Mark and Amber a lot on this series, about the changes from the comics and their relationship. So we get a scene of Mark coming back to Earth once again after being gone. And him and Amber get coffee and they kind of just talk about their problems. And, you know, again, like we talked about last episode, very healthy kind of discussion between the two of them. But knowing where their relationship goes in the comics, Sean, give me your thoughts on this whole thing. Again, you have some really great insight on this.
Yeah, it was pretty great. And yeah, we were talking to this before, this little detail of when he goes to pick up the coffee, inside the coffee, like the like foam is like two broken hearts, which I was like, dang, I noticed my second watch and I was like, oh man, wow, what a great little visual cue that I left in there. Cause it's so easy to miss, you know, but when you catch it, you're like, oh man, that's good.
You bastard.
But I love how they say, they're like, this feels like a first date, and Mark's like, a bad first date. Because they almost don't even know what to talk about, because you know, he's been gone for so long, he came back then left again, and it's such a hard thing to navigate. And her talking about how hard it is for her to have her like life be a secret and there's no one she can really talk to about it is rough. Like, that's hard. And Mark just being like, I wish I had powers so I could just be with you, and her basically saying like, this is what makes you is that the fact that you have these powers and you're trying to use them for the greater good. Like, that's what makes you, and that's like why I'm into you. But it's just rough to see like two people who kind of work so well together, but like are destined, almost like seemingly destined to not be together. You know what I mean? It's almost like too hard. It's like the times where Peter Parker and MJ don't work out, which, you know, like eventually they do, but there's a lot of times where they don't,
you know?
And he's, you know, like a 25-year-old poor broken man that just swings around fighting crime. You know, it's kind of similar, but he's in college, so it kind of makes it a little more depressing.
Yeah. And Mark, I mean, you know, all love to Spidey and stuff, but Mark's dealing with some a little bigger stuff than our boy Peter was at that age. But yeah, I really, again. But again, we love Mark and Amber on this show and like the changes to their relationship. And I think, like you said, you brought it up perfectly. I love how they've depicted their relationship in such a way where it's like neither one of them is at fault. Like they're both doing the right thing, but it's just like you said, it's just two people that should be together but can't be together. And I really love too the addition of like you were saying, Amber's line of her saying like, you know, you have all these powers, so you have to do these things, and I wouldn't be with you if you didn't do that. Which again, right, we've talked about this before, but just shows like how much more supportive and understanding that the TV version of Amber is from the comic.
Right.
And it, again, we talked about this before we started recording, but it really makes me interested to see what they're going to do with Amber's character moving forward. So go, we're going to get it. I mean, this whole thing is spoilers for the episode, but we're going to get into a little bit of spoilers for the comics here. But most people out there know already that Mark and Eve begin a relationship. And like in the comics, they're like, you know, Peter and MJ, right? Like perfect couple almost. Yeah. But, and also in the books, like when Amber and Mark eventually do break up, Amber's just kind of gone. Like we get a couple, there's one issue where there's an issue that happens with her where Mark has to, you know, step in. And then like 30 issues later, we get like a glimpse of her, right? Like just walking down the street, kind of just like, hey, remember that character, right? Like one of those things. So right. I'm very, again, very interested to see in the show how they're going to play Amber's character. Cause we talked about it. It seems like they've given her such a more prominent role in this, like not even just in the show, but in the relationship. Like she's her and Mark are on such equal footing. So I'm so curious. I feel like there's no way they're going to just like Mark and Amber break up and then Amber Zazie Beetz is just not on the show anymore. Right. Like that doesn't really make sense to me. So I feel like she's going to have more to do. And I'm just very excited and interested to see what that's going to be for her character.
Yeah. There's more I want to add to this when we get to something else, but yeah, it definitely seems like they're building her up for something different in the show, even post this relationship, which again, they don't break up.
Yeah.
But they're in a very kind of, they're at a fork in the road relationship for sure.
Before we move on, I just really want to say very quickly the last thing about Mark and Amber. In the book, Amber's actually like kind of seeing another guy. And Mark they're not like dating day. It's like a study friend, right? Like they're just like spending a lot of time together, but she doesn't like outright cheat on him. But when Mark comes back from the secret attack, he comes to see Amber and she's with this guy and he's just like, oh shit. And I think he like goes with Cecil or something. I don't know, does something else. But again, going back to what we talked about last week with the show giving them opportunities to actually confront their problems together, I think that this is another great example of that. Cause as opposed to in the book, Mark sees this and just kind of goes off. They don't get that opportunity to actually discuss what's going on, like what the problem is. But right here, they kind of flipped that and gave us this entire coffee scene to really, like I said, have them actually talk out their problems, which again, I just really love that.
Yeah, it's great. And like we said, they put a lot into these episodes, but it never feels like it's too much, which is such a hard line to kind of tackle. And they do it so well.
Yeah.
Because they give you scenes like this, where it's just, you know, a few minutes, two characters sitting in a coffee shop talking, you know, after someone got their head, like, you know, blown off like 15 minutes before. Like it's crazy. It's almost unexplainable what they pull off in this series, you know?
Yeah. And especially like we talk about all the time, like the way that they're weaving in different themes and events from the comics to kind of make this new. It's so hard to explain because like I don't want to say new because like we talked about a lot of it's like one-to-one translation to the book.
Right.
But it's just, it makes it a whole new thing. Like I said, even just small little additions like Mark and Amber in a coffee shop or Immortal telling Mark to not fail. Like these small little things completely, at least for me, change the scope of a lot of different things.
Right. Well, and you're seeing the stuff come to life. It's not just a static image on a page, you know, it's so much different when you, there's like voices attached and like real emotions, not just the emotions like a comic book makes you feel, which comic books surely do, 100%, but it's different when it's you see the actions actually play out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It brings it to life. So when the, when it does that, plus adding all these new layers to it, that just amplifies it, you know? Mm-hmm. So like I said, like even knowing what's coming, like it, I can definitely see why it totally is like a cool, almost fresh experience for comic readers too.
Yeah.
Because there's still those little surprises in there. Or you're like, oh, wow, they did that way differently. That's really cool. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's nice. It's yeah. cool that it's like a an awesome, even though it is a pretty direct adaptation, there still is new things for anyone watching, regardless if you've read it or not. And I think that's really special and a hard thing to pull off, honestly.
Impossible. Damn near impossible, which is why it hasn't been done before this. I mean, obviously, we've had comic book adaptations and, you know, all that jazz. But again, the way that they do it here, which we've talked about extensively, is just it will be the new template for future adaptations. Oh, for it sure. has to be. Like, there's no, like, again, this is the perfect example of how to do it right. But
yeah,
100%. Going, I feel like I'm missing something, but the next thing I got on my docket is Debbie and the Babysitter. Am I missing something in between that?
Maybe Mark coming home and then us finding the name.
Oh yeah.
Those are linked very closely.
Baby name. You take it away, Sean.
Oh man, we get the reveal. Oliver.
Mm-hmm.
The son, the brother, the weird alien.
Thraxen baby. Half breed.
That happened before. That happened before they go to coffee because she asks about him. And he says, oh, Oliver. And he makes that line about how Debbie has to chew the food for him.
Yeah. Just,
I mean, you got to do what you got to do. But
you got to do what you got to do. But yeah, that's a big reveal. I mean, they were kind of keeping the name a secret and stuff. I remember last episode, we actually had to stop ourselves a couple times because it's so
weak. I'm saying it.
Yeah, we kept almost saying Oliver and we had to change it to Alien Baby. But yeah, I mean, It doesn't feel like it now, but that is a major moment in the grand scope of things.
Honestly, to now, it felt like a major moment.
Yeah.
Even though it's kind of like a little short scene. It's, you know, you just found out this baby existed. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, well, now at this point, a few months ago. But to finally know the name of this kid, and it's named after Mark's grandfather, I think.
Yeah, Debbie's dad.
Yeah. Which is cool. And she's like, yeah, I needed an actual name rather than, you know, Nolan's alien son or whatever. yeah. So it's nice. It's nice to have a name attached to this. It's awesome. You know, it calls Mark Brabara, which is adorable.
Yeah.
I'm usually not the biggest fan of babies, admittedly. Mm-hmm. They can either be cute. Some are cute and some honestly do look like aliens. So
no arguments here.
Hit or miss with me. But I mean, it's a cartoon too, so I guess that helps.
Yeah,
but adorable little baby.
Hey, and I'll tell you,
I don't
right
really
now.
Know what happens in the future with him, mm-hmm. but I'm so curious.
Well, I'll tell you right now, enjoy him now while he's nice and cute. No, enjoy him now. That's all I'm gonna say. I won't say, I'm not spoiling nothing. All y'all out there who have watched or are watching and listening to this and have read the comics, you guys know what I'm talking about. But yeah, enjoy.
That baby's growing fast.
Enjoy cute baby Oliver, my friend. Enjoy the cute baby Oliver. But we also get something else I want to talk about is Debbie searching for a nanny for Oliver. And that kind of takes up a little bit of this episode. And yes. Something else I think, well, I don't think I know. It relates to what we were talking about in last episode with Cecil paying Mark and Debbie in the books. So in the show, we see Debbie does not want Cecil's help. Not only does she not want his help, but she's like actively sniffing out people that Cecil sends to the house. So she's looking for a babysitter and, you know, mm-hmm. got the typical old lady like nanny or whatever seems great. And Debbie's like, yeah, well, I don't want people who work for Cecil as my nanny, so get the fuck out of here, basically.
Yep.
And again, just another great example of Debbie having a little bit more authority over herself and of her situation, because in the book, like we talked about last episode, she is more than willing to take Cecil's help. And like, this isn't even a discussion, but in the book, whatever issue it is, the babysitter just shows up. I forget what her name is, the blonde lady.
Yeah,
she just shows up and it's just like, hey, I'm here for Oliver. And, you know, I've worked with a bunch of superhero kids before and yada, 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 done. And so, like I said, this whole kind of thing of Debbie not wanting Cecil's help and the babysitter, like, convincing Debbie, like, oh, I'm here. Like, Cecil hired me, but I don't work for Cecil. Like, I work for you. And so, again, I just really love it because going back to everything we talk about our girl, Debbie, you know, again, giving her a little bit more authority in her own life, her own decision making. And I just love it all around the board.
Yeah. And I love how she makes a statement like, this is for Mark because it's Mark's brother.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. And I know that's a big change from the books too, because she kind of like partially blames Mark for Nolan leaving because she's so attached to Nolan
mm-hmm.
in such like a weird, unhealthy way, which I can see why Kirkman did that, because that it can be an interesting thing to see, mm-hmm. kind of like a Stockholm syndrome kind of thing.
Yeah.
But again, I love these more updated, you know, nuances that he's brought, especially to Debbie. And it's nice. And even the fact that she kind of succeeds to help having Cecil help, but it's kind of under her own terms, because they have a very good point. Like, who else knows how to take care of an alien baby, especially yeah. one that's half Viltrumite? Mm-hmm. I can't imagine that the list of that is long
and ages rapidly too.
Right. Yeah, that makes me think like season 3 is gonna be a teenager. Like, that's a guess. I have no idea, but like, I can see it. You know, this, we've known this baby for like a few episodes and he's already talking and walking.
Yeah,
like we're not gonna see this baby for very long. That's for sure. That's not spoiling anything. I don't know anything.
Yeah,
I just had that feeling that like, oh, he's gonna be like a bratty teenager next mm-hmm. season or something. Like, and it'll have powers too, which will make things so much worse.
Yeah. Well, we got to think. So I don't think we get like a solid number on how long Thraxans live, but they say it's like a matter of weeks that like their lifespan is, right? And obviously the Viltrumite DNA slows that down rapidly. But another interesting part about the Thraxan biology is that they can learn like almost instantaneous.
Oh yeah, super
like
fast.
Because their lifespans are so short, so they can learn things at like crazy fast rate, which again makes everything very interesting. And it does seem though the show is kind of slowing that aging just a bit.
Huh.
And I don't, which this could just be from like perspective, because like you were just saying, seeing things in live action as opposed to, you know, on a panel. And also too, like, you know, I devoured the comic, you know, like that, right? This show you wait week by week. So again, it might be right. Once it's coming out, the perspective of it might make it seem longer. In the books, he, like you said, he's a baby. And then all of a sudden it's like next issue, he's like a tween and then a teen, you know, like very boom, 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 boom. Like he ages very rapidly. Yeah.
I can just see it coming.
Like you said, you're on the right track there, buddy. But I mean, I'm just gonna stop myself because I can't talk about Oliver without spoiling shit. Because
right. Makes sense.
He plays a big part. I'll say that he plays a big part, and if you like the character right now, you will get a lot more of him. I'll say that.
I mean, but I figure he's gonna be a big point moving forward for sure.
Oh yeah, I mean, he's Viltrumite, dude. Like that's all it's about, man. Viltrumite. But here's a question for you though, just to get your brain you know, those gears moving a little bit, and for everyone at home. So like I said, Thraxans age very rapidly. They learn very rapidly. So what does that mean for when he gets his powers?
Yeah, he's going to be fast.
Yeah, we see how strong Mark is, but Mark still isn't as strong as Omni-Man yet, right?
No, yeah, I feel like he's gonna level up so fast.
Yeah. So I'm just going to leave that with you all to chew on, right? I'm not going to tell you all the answer, but you can just chew on that for a little bit. Let those gears turn. But something else I want to mention, because I feel like this is another, again, we should title this the episode of side characters, or like, you know, supporting characters getting their dues, because another interesting thing I want to talk about is Rick. So we get Rick coming yes. back in this episode, and we get kind of a small little scene of him kind of dealing with what happened to him, like, and like struggling with what happened to him, right? Like, he's back, but you can tell he's not all there. Back, right? Yeah. And this is, again, a very minor change, but makes me interested to see what they'll do with it in the show, because we do get this in the book, but very, very briefly. Like, it is, so we, in the book, we see Rick waking up from his surgery. You know, he's a cyborg, but, you know, looks the same. And then later on, we get like issues later, we get another moment of him like struggling with what happened to him. But then that's it. Then we don't really meet up with Rick again. We do in different contexts that I don't want to spoil, but it's not in like a superhero fashion. So adding Rick in the show, not only adding him in the show, like I said, it plays out very similar in the comics, but it seems like they're putting a lot more emphasis on Rick's kind of mental state and like what yeah. happened to him and how he's dealing with that. It seems like they're putting a lot more focus on that, which, again, I find super interesting. It makes me think that we might see Rick do some more things in the show than we did in the comics.
Yeah, for sure. And definitely with the addition of Donald being his like liaison and his kind of PTSD pal almost.
Yeah.
I think is very interesting as well. It mm-hmm. adds a new layer to it. You know what yeah. I mean?
And that's another thing that we don't get in the comics too. I mean, Donald and Rick have a conversation with each other, and I don't want to say what that conversation is, because I think it's a spoiler for next episode.
Right.
But they do interact, but it's not like Donald isn't like assigned to Rick or like, mm-hmm. you know, it's nothing like that. They just kind of by chance have an encounter together. Right.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. And even seeing there's like a moment where Mark's like, "Are you okay?" And is like handshaking, but it's like almost like he sees himself in mm-hmm. Rick. And I think that's kind of what's bothering him.
Yeah.
And I like that. I like you said, it's like all these side characters are getting these like moments to shine, which is nice. It's cool. Yeah. It's cool.
It really fleshes out the world. I mean,
for sure.
Don't get me wrong. Love the comic. The comic does. And again, going back to the Invincible comic, has a lot of kind of offshoot comics within yeah. their universe, right? Like Guardians of the Globe. And there's, I forget the name. It's like a wolf something. It's like a wolf guy. But what I'm getting at, though, is I feel like in the show, they're kind of using that kind of same avenue, but to the characters already in our Invincible universe, right? And it just makes, whereas in the book, you have all these other books that kind of pop in, making the world feel kind of alive and real. I think it translates a little bit better in the show by using our main slash side characters, right? Do you get what I'm saying here? I feel like I'm losing my train of thought here.
No, mm-hmm. totally, because they all interact with the main characters.
Yeah,
so it's like, why wouldn't you give them more depth too? Mm-hmm. You know, so it just kind of like rises everything together, which is nice. Man, give me a Science Dog special, like Adam Eve.
Yes, please. Science Dog or a Seance Dog.
Seance Dog, right?
Yeah, he's Science Dog in the comics, but Seance Dog.
Oh, yeah, Seance Dog.
Dude,
yeah.
I would love that. A Seance Dog little,
even like, if it was side adventure. I know he's like a fake character within the universe, kind of like a, you know, like a Marvel character to them in the universe. It would be awesome mm-hmm. if they did like a fake movie.
Oh, I could see it happening.
Like, kind of how like Lightyear was supposed to be like the movie that Andy saw that made him want the Lightyear toy. Mm-hmm. Like, this is the movie Mark saw when he was a kid and made him fall in love with Sans Dog.
I would love that too. And I mean, Invincible does have a lot of great kind of meta commentary in the book. Yeah. Like there's multiple. So going back to Seance Dog or Science Dog, that's a in-universe comic book that Mark is like obsessed with. And there's multiple times in the comic where Mark meets the writer of Science Dog, and I forget what exactly he says. He's like, they're talking about like monthly comic issues, right? And he's like, Mark is like, yeah, but I really just hate that it's like a revamp every month, because it's like, yeah, it's great to get new readers in, but it just alienates the old readers, like actual commentary about like comics and stuff in the universe. And they did it too with a movie in the comic. And he like talks about like, oh yeah, like, you know, they let you do whatever you want when you have a big budget, you know? So I'm excited to see more stuff like that in the show, and like kind of more in-universe references to like the media and stuff that Mark consumes, because again, that's kind of a, I don't want to say vital part of Mark's character, not like, you know, his dealing with, you know, right and wrong and stuff like that, but like, right, he's a nerd, and like there's multiple times in the comics where he just like is like, oh, I can't wait to go home and read this stack of comics and stuff. Yeah. And I think that's one thing I could use a little bit more of in the show.
Well, we might get some more of that next episode, maybe. I don't know.
Maybe. I don't know, man. You'll have to ask someone who's seen it. But no, like I said, I just mean like in general, though. I would love to explore a little bit more of the kind of, again, like media that exists in the world of Invincible.
Yeah. Yeah. There is a nice meta joke next episode that I enjoy quite a bit.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I asked Robert Kirkman about. It was nice.
Oh, I can't wait to hear that one. I'll link that into the description of our video once that pops up. So everyone keep an eye out for that. But wrapping up this episode, Alan and Immortal, we get Alan coming back.
We can't skip the big art.
Oh, arc. That's probably what I've been thinking about this whole episode of what I'm forgetting. Yeah,
even, yes. Amber.
Dude.
They do.
Take it away, Sean. Set us up. Take it away.
First, Mark goes to see Rex, and it's right after his coffee conversation, and you know, he's like, oh, Rex is like, you look terrible. That's coming from a guy looking like me. And you see this nice like evolution of Rex that I love. And I know it's different in the comics. He's kind of like way more of still like a total dick. And I love that they're totally making his like redemption arc happen right now, because it makes you, it's like such a great, it's a great arc, honestly, mm-hmm. of you know, him seeing like, I almost died, and I realized how much a shitbag I was. I don't want to be a shitbag anymore. I like that. But as he's leaving, he bumps into Eve, and then, you know, like Rex kind of spills that Amber and Mark are in trouble. You know, trouble is happening. So then we cut to see Eve going home. She gets confronted by Cecil, but Cecil's kind of like, hey, I want you to join the team. Team's kind of fucked right now.
Yeah.
Mortal's depressed, shrinking rays in a coma. Rex is recovering. We're kind of down a few. Kate's dead. Like we're down. We're down some people. We don't got many options. And she's like, I'm still trying to figure out myself. But if you need any help, let me know. I'm always glad to help. Which is cool. Kind of sets up for her eventual joining. Probably. I don't know. Like, I haven't read the comics. I just imagine that she joins eventually. And then Amber meets up to talk with Eve, which I know is not in the comics. Again, this is the thing I was talking about. That adds so much, and it makes me interested to see where this is going to go with her character, and especially if she's the one who confides in Eve about her relationship with Mark, and then eventually when Mark and Eve get together, what does that do to Amber?
Mm.
You know what I mean? Does that drive? Because we don't know, because there's no comic parallel to compare it to. Like you said, they break up and she's just kind of gone. It definitely seems like they're setting her up for something, but like, is there going to be some crazy turn where Amber becomes like a super villain or something? Like,
yo, that's me being crazy. What? That would be nuts. I love it though. That would be crazy.
But they're adding such these things, and she's such like a rational character now.
Mm-hmm.
But what if, you know, like you know, she thought Eve was her friend. She thought she was just, you know, she's just like the, you know, the girl that Mark fights crime with, saves the world with. And then like, boom, they're together. Like, there's no way she cannot get jealous and get messed up over that.
No,
like,
yeah, for
regardless
sure.
of how mature you are, that's messed up. You
know, I will say, though, I don't know. I feel like Amber in the show, she's solid, man. Like, she might, like you said, for sure, I mean, feel a type of way about it. Yeah. But I don't know, man. I mean, like we talked about, Amber's pretty damn mature and like very healthy.
I'm just putting my crazy theory hat on, you know?
No, bro, I love it. I love it. I want to see Evil Amber so bad now. Like, that would be awesome. And talk about a freaking twist for comic readers and show watchers. Oh, my God. Holy shit, that would be great. I love
that. Just me just talking crazy. But they intercut this with an amazing...
Can you hear me out there?
Yeah. I got an idea for you, buddy.
Yeah.
We talked once. We're best friends. It's fine. I got you, you know. But they intercut this conversation amazingly with Art and Mark. And you see they're both at the same spot. They think they're failing each other, which is, again, a testament to both of them of how mature they are. And it's just rough, you know. It's just like you can see the inevitable coming, you know. And it seems like there's nothing they can do to stop it, even though they both care so much.
Yeah.
But it is interesting that he goes to Art to talk about it, because who else is he going to talk about it with, really? I know he has his best friend, but he's dealing with his, you know, recovering android boyfriend at the time.
And he doesn't get it either, man. Like, I mean, at least Art, like, has been around the block, you know? I mean, him and Nolan...
BFFs.
Yeah, exactly. BFFs. I was just going to say, I feel like that's something the show didn't really emphasize as much as in the books. But, like, him and Art and Nolan were freaking tight. Like, that was his boy. And I love something that you brought up. My favorite part about this whole scene is the addition, like you said, of Amber and Eve. And the parallels, like switching from literally from like sentence to sentence, switching between the conversations. So good that does not happen in the books. In the books, it's just Mark and Art's conversation. Issue 35. So in issue 35, they have this conversation. But again, we do not see Amber and Eve have a conversation or like, again, the parallels between the two. Oh, yeah. so good. Kirkman, whoever decided to do that, hats off to you for that, because again, it everything that we've been talking about just kind of emphasizes the scene so much better, gives us a lot more context of what's going on with both Mark and Amber, not just Mark's perspective. Because I mean, obviously the show is called Invincible. Mark's our main character in the books. That's who we focus on, which it's like, that's not a criticism, that's obvious. But here I feel like we're really getting an emphasis on both of them. Like we talked about how they're both very in charge of the relationship, how they both have these issues. And it just makes sense with how they've set it up before that when we get this conversation, we're not just getting Mark's side of things. We're getting Amber's side as well. And it's just, I can't say enough good things. It was such a great moment.
Yeah. It's really incredible what they do with that 100%. And then we see Art give Mark his Nolan's science fiction books, which he was like, yeah, they weren't bestsellers, but that comes into major play when he starts reading them. And a certain favorite alien of ours returns to the fold.
Yes, our boy Alan, dude. We've talked about this, especially on the Alan episode of this season, but that's my guy, dude. Alan is my guy. He's like my favorite character, I think.
He's great. He's great. And that's kind of like teed off by a proximity sensor, and Immortal goes up there when he's having that conversation with Cecil about how, like, I want to quit. And Cecil's like, bro, I have no one left. Please don't. He says it in a way more mean way, but that's what he means in his head for sure, because he's like, fuck, I have no one. Please don't leave, dude.
Like, Robot, you're up, damn it.
Oh yeah, and then he promotes Robot back to leader again. I forgot about that. But then he goes up there to fight Alan, and then Mark of course joins and is like, yo, he's a good guy. What do you do? And then they go back to their dorm room. This is one of my favorite lines of the entire show, is when Mark puts a sock on the door handle and Alan goes, back where I'm from, that means someone's fucking.
He's like, yeah, it means that they're here too.
And Mark's like, yeah, dude, that's the same here. That was the best line. It was so good. I want to know if that was Seth Rogen ad-libbing or what, whatever, whoever wrote that line, kudos. Cause that's,
I'm trying to think, I think that's in the book. I think that's in the book, but I'd have to go back and make sure. But another funny thing that happens in the book that doesn't happen here that I thought was really funny is Why do I keep blanking on this guy's name? Mark's friend. I keep blanking on his name for some reason today.
His roommate?
Yeah.
What is that? I keep reading his name too.
It's fucking Zach. Rick's boyfriend, dude. Yeah, Rick's boyfriend. Oh, William. William. Yeah. Right. Fucking William. But in the book, William walks in on Mark and Alan in the room. And like he like freaks the fuck out, like completely loses it. And
that would have been funny to see.
Yeah, it's just a little funny thing, but I really love that. But yeah, again, Alan's the best, and I loved this scene of them what's it called? Sorry, fighting Immortal. Because I think again, it just kind of goes more to what we're talking about, Immortal trusting Mark a little bit more, and I think it just, you know, emphasizes where Immortal's at right now, like you were just talking about with, you know, he's depressed as fuck, for lack of a better word. He's missing Kate. He doesn't know if he wants to be on the Guardians. He sees someone coming in and just like, boom, let's go.
Well, he thinks it's Omni-Man.
Yeah, he thinks it's Omni-Man, which I think also goes to show, again, where Immortal's at in the sense of like, he's still very paranoid and prepared for, like, he thinks Omni-Man is coming back, and he just kind of just counting the days down until that happens.
Right. But the biggest part of Alan and Mark getting together is them kind of realizing the meaning of these books, mm-hmm. and that Nolan, for some reason, created this failsafe of the secret of how to like take out Viltrumites, which is wild. And
yeah,
Alan does ask Invincible to come back and like prepare for this oncoming war that's coming mm-hmm. eventually. But he's like, no, I have to stay here. But he's like, when that fight comes, I will be there 100%. So he kind of takes the books back and he's like, well, hopefully he'll be happy with this.
Yeah.
Hopefully we'll be happy with this. But it was cool to kind of see like them like animate the stories and stuff, and like talk about like the those one creatures that were so used to the gravity that they're like technically stronger than those on that planet.
Ragnar or something like Ragnar's, that. Yeah. Oof.
And then like those space,
some nasty
space racer or whatever the fuck his name is.
Legend of the Space Racer.
Yeah. Dude. I know he has a different name or something. They're like, oh, Alan's like, oh yeah, I thought he was a like a legend.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like he's real, you know. It's just cool to see kind of like,
is he real?
Some alien lore.
Yeah,
I mean, maybe. Yeah, I don't know, we'll see, I guess,
because that leads into a question I want to ask you. This is something that we left off on the mid-season finale with Nolan, so I want to ask you again now that we've learned this information. So like you just said, for whatever reason, Nolan wrote these books and wrote them documenting things that could hurt Viltrumites, right?
Right.
So I asked you on one of our last episodes, do you think that Omni-Man can be redeemed? That Nolan can be redeemed? And now that you learned that he documented these things, what does that change your thoughts on that?
It does make me think that he was either, if it was consciously or subconsciously, was like falling for Earth. Mm-hmm. Not even just Debbie, not even just his son Mark, but like something about that planet changed him. And that's obvious now. But like things like this makes me seem like it proves it even more.
Mm-hmm.
And there obviously, I think, is going to be a day where Omni-Man returns back to Earth. But he's going to be on the other side. And I think it's going to be a very complicated thing for a lot of people to deal with, especially if we're talking about like Immortal. Mm-hmm. Even Mark, Debbie, and just the world in general. This dude who kind of just, you know, everyone thought he was a hero for decades. And then one day, nope, he's the villain.
Mm-hmm.
So anyone kind of coming back like that, it's a big thing. And again, how this show deals with those kinds of emotions and those kind of feelings, I'm very excited to see how they handle that. But redeemed is a complicated word.
Yeah.
I do think he has good in him, obviously, especially now, after like the mid-season finale and stuff like that. I just think it's going to be a very complicated thing for Earth as a whole to handle him coming back and fighting for their side. Because
mm-hmm.
again, I do think, I don't know, but it's evident that they're building towards that. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Mark kind of forgiving him, sort of, you know, there's that steps towards forgiveness. I think Debbie is going to be the hardest one mm-hmm. of anyone.
Yeah.
Even Cecil. Because Cecil's going to be like, oh, he's on our side. Thank fucking God. Jesus. Don't trust him, but at least for now, he's on our side. Thank God. Yeah. And I'm just very interested because, like, the whole obviously the big looming presence is the oncoming Viltrumite War that only, like, you know, a few people know about in the world.
Like two people.
Like Cecil, Debbie, Amber, which what's Amber going to do?
Yeah.
Nothing. Super villain.
I mean, I'll say, you never know, man.
Maybe there's some like compound B stuff that comes and she becomes like a Viltrumite and then joins them. I don't know. I'm talking crazy. I'm talking crazy.
Hey, this is the place for the crazy theories, man. Let them fly.
But I don't know. And I don't know when that comes in the storyline. Mm-hmm. Obviously, they're kind of going more and more ramping towards it, but it could be a few seasons from now, for all I know. Obviously, you have a better idea of it, but I'm also curious to see what's post that. Is that like the end all be all? Is that the end game of the comics? I have no idea. And that's another interesting thing as a viewer who hasn't read the comics to be like looking forward to this, but also not knowing where it comes. Mm-hmm. But the way they're building toward it is very good because there's all these, you know, more immediate threats, but the biggest threat's always there in the back. And they've set it up from kind of the jump, not fully the jump, but mostly the end of season two, part one. But yeah, the whole Viltrumite thing has kind of been the big thing starting with Nolan, but it's nice that they're starting it now and it's kind of just always there. And I like that. And it becomes more evident as more things come along. And that's genius. That's genius writing. So I love it. It's great.
Yeah, I can't agree with you more, and I'm not going to say anything because I do not want to spoil anything, but that's a great analysis, Sean. Great analysis. And I got to say, too, I'm not going to spoil anything, but I love from the interaction that we got with Mark and Nolan on Thraxa, I'm interested to see where that's all, like, everything you're talking about, where that's going to go as a viewer as well, because like we talked about in that episode breakdown, like, Mark is very much like, dude, fuck you, like, you know, like, yeah, you're my dad, but fuck you. And so I'm very interested as we go forward in this season and the series as a whole, like you were saying, the reactions of others to Nolan and to Omni-Man. That's something that I'm very interested to see how it plays out, because it's definitely going to be different than how it was in the books, which, again, I'm not going to say anything about that because you all need to experience that for yourself. But before we get out of here, Sean, we have a little tease at the end of this episode. And it is, I think there's more than I'm even remembering now, but the one I'm thinking of is the sequids are not gone. They are still around. Fucking Russ Livingston, bro, they should have just left his ass on Mars. Like, he is nothing but trouble.
Poor guy. Dude hasn't slept in like months.
That's true. That part did get me a little bit, where he's like, they don't sleep. I haven't slept. I was like, holy shit, that's freaky, brutal, man. Yeah.
Super brutal. So yeah, there was three teases at the end of this. So there's a sequid things, which is, I mean, I'm sure that's going to come to bite us in the ass some way, especially them being on Earth. That's trouble. That's terrible.
Yeah.
Bad news.
Bad. Eventually.
You know, just as Invincible does, tease a little thing, it'll come back later. And then they have Omni-Man talking with Krieg, basically like, we're going to execute you, bro. Deal with it. And then we see Angstrom Levy getting suited up in a suit, a nice suit, not like a power suit. And then we see him walk through a bunch of different universes, kind of prepping for his revenge tour. So they say.
Dum, dum, dum.
We do see him walk through a zombie world. And I wanted to ask Kirkman this, and I didn't. But I wonder, is that like supposed to be the Walking Dead world? I don't know.
It's gotta be.
Or just like a nod to like, hey, it's zombies.
Yeah, it's got to be The Walking Dead. I'll say, this isn't a spoiler, it goes to what you're saying, but we see that it happened in the comics too, and it's never it's not like it says like The Walking Dead universe, right? But I mean, that's Kirkman's other huge property. It's zombies, and at least to me, I'm not like an art expert or anything like that, so I can't really say what it is that makes it the same, but just like the color shading and like the way the scene, like it just looks like The Walking Dead, like the whole ambiance of the scene. So I mean, yeah, that's figured, Walking Dead for sure.
It would make sense. It would make sense.
I want to go through each one of those and really dissect the unit, because I'm sure there's something in there. But yeah, I'm man, sure. Angstrom, oof, Angstrom. I cannot wait to see what that man is gonna do. I gotta stop talking because I'm gonna say too much. But yeah, the all three of these little cliffhangers are amazing, and I mean they're all very important to
for sure
what is coming. So I cannot wait. I just gotta stop.
Yeah, we can't go any further.
For that, you're gonna have to wait till next episode of Beyond Invincible for episode 7. And before we get out of here, Sean, I gotta ask you, what is your favorite moment? We talked about so many things in this episode. We've been talking about how this episode was packed, but what was your overall number one moment from this episode?
It's tied between Rex's redemption and the intercut conversation with Art and Mark and Eve and Amber. Those are like, I mean, and Rex getting shot in the head was, I was like, oh, oh my God.
Literally. I don't know if we've had an episode here where we've disagreed. I feel like every single time we have the same moment and then I pick another one just because it's the same one. But yeah, I mean, Art and Mark, that was my favorite, Art and Mark, and then Eve and Amber, for all the reasons that we discussed in the episode. I just thought I loved the scene in the book, like kind of getting an insight of, like I said, Mark's position and the kind of like besides the superhero stuff, but the way that they translated in the show, cutting between Eve and them, it was just not only a great scene, but I just really loved and appreciated how they executed it, which I think made it my favorite moment. But I mean, I gotta say too, though, the Rex just brutalizing King Lizard, I think that's gotta be my top for the episode, because like you said, I was just like, holy shit, man, they're going for it.
Yeah.
They went for it. But that, I think we covered it all, my man. I think we covered all this episode. We're going to have to reconvene for next episode because there's so much I want to say, but I can't say.
Not yet.
We're going to have to leave you guys with it. So if you guys enjoyed watching or listening to this episode, please give us a like and subscribe. It really helps us out. You can go find Sean over at Metalcore Nerds with all of his great interviews, articles, all that stuff. Also, go check out his work over at The Streamer with his interview with Robert Kirkman, the creator of Invincible himself. I know that those are kind of trickling out through the week, so I will keep updating these videos in the description with the links to those. So keep checking back here. Go to the description and you'll see all the updates on Sean's articles with that. You can check out my articles for Invincible over at Agents of Fandom. You can also go over to BCW Supplies and use code Sons of Mjolnir for 10% off of your order. Again, that's Sons of Mjolnir. 10% off of your order, bags, boards, anything you use to collect, we got you covered. Thank you guys all for joining us this week. It has been an absolute pleasure. I hope you all stay hydrated. I hope your stacks are fat. And we will see you guys all next time for another episode of Beyond Invincible.